It's time to turn the spotlight on local, national, and international affairs, plus some goss and scandal. And here's the man that does that so well, Mitchell Dye.
And good morning. Thanks very much to Fred and Cheryl for a very good country breakfast program this morning. They'll be back on Thursday from 7 a.m. sharp, so tune in then. We've got a very big program today. It's our election special. Given what we heard yesterday, the announcement came through pretty much just as we were finishing up with the program yesterday that there would be most likely a double dissolution on July the 2nd. This is all dependent on how a special sitting of Parliament plays out on April the 18th, but we'll explain all that a little bit later on. But we are speaking to a lot of the candidates, and we're looking forward to speaking very broadly to as many different people as possible in the lead up to the election, and we've got one of those candidates with us in the studio now. I'm very pleased to welcome Sarah Mansfield to the program. She is the Greens candidate for Corio. So Sarah, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mitch. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. And are you a fresh face when it comes to running for politics? Have you run for anything like this before?
Yes, this is my first time running as a candidate for anything, so new experience for me and very exciting.
How long have you been involved in the Greens?
So I've been involved with the Greens actively since the beginning of last year, but I would say I've been a Greens supporter for a lot longer.
Yeah, right. And you've obviously followed politics a great deal over the years, and that's why you're so interested in it, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what makes someone like you put your hand up and say, I want to run for politics? This is the most common question that we ask all candidates.
Yeah, so my background is I work as a general practitioner, and prior to that I did some work in emergency medicine, and even throughout my medical studies, I think I quickly began to realise that a lot of the things that affect people's health the most are things that occur outside of a doctor's office. They're things that a doctor can't really influence. They're things like access to housing and employment, our environment, affordability of healthcare. And so all of those issues are things that I noticed more and more throughout my work. I then went on and did some further studies on health policy, planning and financing at the London School of Economics because I was interested in how we can build better, fairer health systems. And it was after that I started paying a lot more attention to the nitty-gritty of Australian health policy, and it was there that I saw Richard Di Natale in action in the Senate, and I was really inspired by him and also what the rest of the Greens party was doing really in terms of health and also their broader social and environmental agenda. And so I felt that, you know, I wanted to be part of that, and the best way that I could do that was by stepping up and becoming involved in the party and then becoming a candidate.
Well, it's very interesting because Richard Di Natale's office is actually just around the corner from us here, we're speaking today. So it seems to be a bit of a recurring theme at the moment to have GPs in Geelong running for the Greens.
Yeah, well, he's certainly been a very direct inspiration for me. I did a little bit of work in his office last year, and I guess that was the catalyst for me deciding to run as a candidate.
So health policy, what are some of the issues that we're facing here in Australia? Obviously, we hear a lot about Medicare, and obviously the Labor Party is saying, well, we brought in Medicare, and they say the government's trying to attack it in a number of different ways. What do you see on the front line as obviously a GP and someone directly affected by the system?
So I suppose to put things in a global context, we have an excellent health system. Many people in a lot of other countries don't have access to anything like what we have here. That said, there is growing inequality in our health system, and that's something that I've seen even throughout my career as a doctor. The out-of-pocket costs, so that's the money that people have to pay out of their own pockets for healthcare, has been rising extremely quickly in Australia. We now have amongst the highest out-of-pocket costs of any wealthy country in the world, and they're still continuing to rise. And the problem with those costs is that they have the biggest impact on those who have the least ability to afford healthcare, and they're often the people who are most in need. So people with chronic illnesses and disabilities, people on low incomes, have a much more difficult time of affording healthcare, and that includes dental care. So you have some households that are spending, you know, a very significant proportion of their low incomes on healthcare. That means that a lot of those people aren't going to get their healthcare. I've seen patients not get their prescriptions filled because they can't afford it. They can't afford to see a specialist, so they put off doing that. They put off seeing a dentist when they've got severe dental problems, and that has significant consequences for their health. I really think that this situation is looking like it's going to get worse unless we start to do something about it.
Well, one such example of a cost would have to be the GP co-payment, which we saw put forth by the government, and it looks like they've run away from that completely now because it didn't have the numbers in the Senate. But the fundamental principle behind that was they said that you needed to have a price signal whenever you went to the doctor. Do you think there's any merit in that argument, this idea that we have to make it more sustainable, so we need a price signal?
So there's not any really good evidence for that. We know that putting a price on attending a doctor does deter people from accessing healthcare. There's very good evidence to show that. The problem is that we have lots of studies that show that people have a very difficult time of deciding what is necessary and unnecessary healthcare. Because when you go to a doctor, you don't know whether the problem you're going for is serious or not. You might come in with some chest pain and it turns out it's indigestion. And someone might say, well, that was an unnecessary visit. But the reality is that could have been a heart attack and you didn't know that. So people aren't always good at determining whether they need care or not. We know that people reduce the amount of healthcare that they consume, necessary and unnecessary care, if they're deterred by a price signal. The other thing that we have good evidence for is that those price signals have the biggest negative impact on those who are on lower income. So people on lower incomes will reduce their consumption of healthcare, if you want to call it consumption. They go to the doctor less, disproportionately less than people on higher income. So it really has an impact on those who we don't want to discourage from seeking healthcare. In the end, it often leads to higher costs because people don't get the preventative care, the doctor GP that they need, and wind up in hospital where treatment is much more expensive and they're much more unwell by that stage.
Well, one point that I saw was the government says that the number of GP visits is increasing and that's why they wanted to bring in a price signal. Do you think that that's true from what you're seeing, that people are visiting the GP more often?
I guess it's hard to tell, when you're there, because you tend to be full anyway. But we know that demand for GP services is definitely there. I mean, we're rarely very quiet. It's always a busy job. But
do you notice the same patients coming again and again, which maybe they weren't a few years ago, or it's just been the same across the board?
I think there are always those patients that need to come in regularly, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, the more you can keep an eye on people, particularly when they've got a chronic disease, and the easier it is for them to access healthcare, often the cheaper it is for the health system in the long run. General practice or primary care is the most efficient part of the health system. And, you get so much value out of what you spend on your primary care services compared to that high-end tertiary hospital-level care, that the more we can invest in that end of care, the better.
Yeah, well, that's all very interesting. If we move over to a couple of other issues, I think the economy is going to be a big issue, obviously, for this particular election, because people are saying, well, the GDP growth is still sluggish and Labor is again accusing the government of mismanaging the economy. Do you have any thoughts there?
Look, I think some of that discussion ends up being very political. I think we definitely have to look at what our economy is doing. A strong economy is important for everyone. It has effects on people's health and well-being, creates jobs. All of those things are very important. I suppose for the Greens, the way we look at the economy is that the function of the economy is to, ensure that everyone in society has, what they need, that they can prosper and have good health, access to education, jobs, all of that side of things. So, the Greens take that perspective when looking at economic issues. They've put out a number of different policies around negative gearing, superannuation, tax concessions, and looking at how we can improve our taxation system so that it's fairer and that rather than cutting services and increasing taxes on those on the lower income spectrum, we focus more on those at the higher end who are earning a lot of money. The other aspect of the Greens' economic platform is focusing on action on global warming, addressing climate change, because that is something that really is the key. We need to transition our economy to a cleaner economy that's not based on those dirty old fossil fuels. The rest of the world is moving away from it. We saw this morning that there's a new climate report that shows last year's temperature records smashed anything that was expected, so they're far surpassed what we were expecting. So we are in, you know, a really, I think, critical phase of, you know, our lifetimes. And if we don't take some action on global warming now and invest in renewable energies, I think we'll be left behind economically, and it'll have impacts on our future in terms of climate change.
So they've got a couple of different approaches there across different parties. Every party wants to reduce carbon dioxide emissions. Obviously, the government has put forth probably the weaker targets. Labour has put forth more ambitious targets. Then the Greens have come forth with even more ambitious targets again. What do you see as the best way of getting people to reduce their emissions? Do you, for example, support a price on carbon? Is it a more direct action scheme where we pay people to clean up their act? What would you say would be the best approach?
So the Greens have always supported putting a price on carbon. That makes a lot of sense. A lot of other countries have done that already. We initially were leading the world with that, but we stepped away from that policy, and we're now lagging behind a lot of other countries that have moved in that direction. But I think a price on carbon is just one aspect of what we need to do. The other part of it is we need to, you know, do a lot more to support industries, our renewable energy technology industries. We need to support innovation in that space because we need new technologies, and we need to support the existing technologies we know that work. People have a huge appetite for renewable energy. Look at the number of, you know, the uptake of solar panels across Australia. It's, you know, we lead the world in terms of, you know, rooftop solar. We love that. And we need to do more to support that. I think somewhere like Geelong could really do with an investment in the renewable energy technology development. We've had huge losses in the manufacturing sector in terms of employment. And we need to you know, harness that skill base, that manufacturing skill base that we have. And what better way to do it than to put it into renewables, where, you know, there is a future in that industry. Yeah. And has great benefits for not just the economy but our environment.
But you're saying that people aren't necessarily gravitating to renewables on their own. They need government investment to get them there.
I think people are, but we need to scale it up bigger and faster. And the problem is that it's still an expensive technology, and there are many people who can't enjoy the benefits of renewable energy. For example, people who are renting their houses don't have a lot of control over what happens there. So there is opportunity for policy in that space. It's still expensive to fit your house out with solar panels and then battery storage. That technology is getting cheaper, but there's a lot more we could do to support that industry and grow it.
Now, if we look at the electorate of Corio, it's been a very long time since anyone other than a Labor member has represented that electorate. What do you think you need to do to change that and presumably turn it green? Obviously, your biggest opponent is going to be the current sitting member, Richard Marles, who's been there since 2007. So what do you think you need to do to knock him out of that position?
Look, I think that my plan for this campaign, you know, we want to run the positive message that the Greens have to sell. I think we have, you know, we differ on a number of areas from the Labor Party, and I think people are looking for a different voice on a number of different issues. I've spoken about healthcare. I actually think that, you know, I mean, there have been some changes that Labor has sort of overseen this rise in when they were in government of out-of-pocket costs. They did oppose the GP co-payment, but they also introduced a freeze on the Medicare rebates for GP visits. So I think there needs to be a different voice in the healthcare space that really is about equitable access to healthcare. I think, you know, our focus on global warming and you know, our plan for improving investment in and growing investment in renewable technology is quite different to what Labor has planned. And the other big issue, and I guess probably quite relevant given Richard Marles' portfolio, is Labor's stance on asylum seekers and people seeking refuge in Australia who try to reach the country by boat. The Greens are absolutely opposed to you know, the government's current policy, which at the moment Labor supports.
Yeah, and we've had Richard Miles in the studio a number of times talking about the point that we can't go back to the point where there's a lot of people drowning at sea. What do you think about that argument, that there needs to be a deterrence?
I think it is absolutely unacceptable to treat people in the way that we are treating them, you know, a small number of people, in order to act as a deterrent. Morally, that just doesn't hold up for me. And most, you know, a lot of the people that I talk to who are, you know, switching to Greens, that is one of the really big issues for them. And it's just morally unacceptable to be putting people in offshore detention centres in the conditions that, I mean, there's not a lot of information that gets out, but a lot of my brave medical colleagues who have worked in these situations have provided some information about how terrible these circumstances are. That is something that we're not just allowing to happen. We are creating that environment. We are deciding that that's the policy avenue we will take, and I find that totally unacceptable. Now, I agree that we need to do what we can to ensure that there are safe pathways to reaching Australia. This is something where I think if you focus on drownings at sea being the problem or the key issue, I think you're missing the big picture. The big issue here is that we have more displaced people around the world than almost any other time in history, and there are people everywhere seeking a safer place to live. Australia is going to be attractive because we are a wealthy country. We offer a good life for people, and so people will be drawn to seek safety here. We need to be working with our partners in the region to develop a process to safely resettle people who need to flee their homes for all sorts of reasons around the world. I'm not saying that these are simple issues, but I think, you know, focusing purely on drownings at sea misses the big picture, and there are alternative approaches. What we're doing at the moment is, I think, just totally unacceptable, and I think it's going to be a period of time that Australians will look back on with shame. And it, you know, I think the sooner we someone has the courage, you know, a party, the Greens certainly have the courage to come out and say, we don't support this, but I would really like to see, you know, the other major, you know, the Labor and Liberals come out and, you know, recognise that this situation is no longer sustainable or acceptable, and start having the courage to have a different conversation around this.
And just last of all, your campaign strategy, where will people be seeing you in Corio? Will you be pounding the pavement, knocking on doors? What's the strategy?
We have a number of different strategies. You'll definitely see us out and about. We want to get out and talk to as many people as we can, really. So you will see us out and about. We want to engage with as many community groups around as we can and find out what they're doing locally and what are their concerns. We'd like to, you know, get out and about visiting people at, you know, the train stations and supermarkets and shopping strips. And certainly in the lead up to the election, you'll be seeing a lot more of us.
Well, very good. Thank you very much. And as we're saying to all candidates, you're welcome to come in here anytime if there's any particular message you'd like to talk about. And hopefully we'll catch up on a regular basis in the lead up to the election. But thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much, Sarah Mansfield there, the Greens candidate for Corio.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.